Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono.
Welcome, Ben, to the Sci-Fi Christian.
How's it going, Matt?
I'm doing good. This is a great day today.
Yes, we are episode number 5.
Oh my
back
gosh.
Again. Yeah, this is our 5th episode, which I guess is kind of a milestone for a new podcast. And we are going to be celebrating with a very special show. Kind of a break from our last few debate-style formats.
Exactly. We're going to do this thing where maybe every 5 or so, we give you top 5 things.
Yeah,
so,
we've got a spreadsheet full of amazing show ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the categories that I have in that spreadsheet are top 5 lists. So we're going to be selecting one of those and doing that every several episodes or so.
And today we've selected top 5 messianic characters.
No. Messiah.
Messiah. Oh,
because
we're
the sci-fi Christian.
You're stressing the sci. I get it.
Yes.
So, yeah, in science fiction, messiahs, and also...
this top 5 satanic characters.
We're going to get both sides of the coin.
Yep, Jesus and the devil. Can't get any better than that, right?
I don't think you can.
Last week, we pitted Tolkien versus Lewis. This week, we're pitting Jesus versus the devil.
It's going to be good.
If we were doing a debate-style format, I'd choose Jesus and you could have the devil.
Hey, do you have handy? We had one of our listeners give us their top 5s.
Well, see...
We don't have to give it right now, but do you have it handy?
I do have it handy, but here's what I was thinking. He had an awesome, awesome list.
Yeah, Scott Herzog from the Sci-Fi Diner podcast.
And, I actually have a few items that overlap.
Oh, so you want to wait till the end?
I thought that what we could do is, as we're going through our top 5, where they overlap, we'll talk about it. And then when we talk about some of our runners-up, we can throw in some of the names that he listed that maybe didn't make our cut.
Nice idea.
Yeah.
So check out Scott Herzog's podcast, The Sci-Fi Diner.
Do you know, does he have a website?
I'm sure he does, and I don't know it off the top of my head, but should we guess sci-fidiner.com?
Yeah, I know he has a Facebook page.
Yeah, check it out while I talk about sci-fi news. Hey, do you, if you want to hit the news, I can get right into it.
Okay, and then we have to sing along. Do I have? Yep, there it is.
It's time for sci-fi news.
All we have tons of news today.
Tons of news.
It has been a heavy news week as opposed to last week.
Yeah. So you kick it off. I've got a few. You've got a few. We've already talked about it. Go.
Well, the one we didn't talk about, though, which I know you put this up on Facebook, and it was literally announced like the day after we recorded last week.
Yes.
Superman has been cast.
Yes. And I forgot his name, but I know he's from Tudors.
Henry Cavill, I believe it is.
And it's getting a good response from the internet audience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. I think he looks as excited as I get about Superman anyway.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the actor, but he looks like he could be Superman. And now the race is on to find the female lead.
Yeah, and did you hear, there was a story this week that suggested that maybe the female lead is not going to be Lois Lane.
Yes, the story suggested it might be another Kryptonian.
Yes.
Whose name was Ursa, maybe?
Who knows?
She was one of the bad guys, though, and the character appeared in Superman 2.
Oh, with their, people. I never saw Superman 2.
Yeah, the Phantom Zone, I think it was called.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I've hated every Superman movie I've ever seen, which is only the very first one in Superman Returns.
Okay. I haven't seen a lot of the Christopher Reeves ones, maybe parts of all of them, but not fully, and I've seen Superman Returns twice, and I...
SciFiDinerPodcast.com.
Oh, that was my guess, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, check that out. That's Scott Herzog's podcast.
Definitely.
And back to Superman, then. I liked Superman Returns, okay, but I didn't love it, and I know you...
Hated it.
I'm sensing a theme from week to week.
Maybe we should have a new segment called Ben's hated thing of the week or something like that.
Or like maybe we should, on special occasions, we can talk about things you like, which is limited.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that's true.
Jesus. Sci-fi.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. It's good. So I'm interested. I wonder who's going to be the female character.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of excited about this because, in my opinion, a lot of what was wrong with Superman Returns is that it was just regurgitating what had been done in the past. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really breaking any new ground. But by saying, first, we're going to cast a Brit as Superman, and then second, we're not going to have Lois Lane as the main female lead. to me, what that's saying is that Nolan and company are making a statement that this is not the same Superman you've seen before. This is something new.
I really hope so. I want to see something totally different, but I also don't want to see an origin story. Do you want to see an origin story again?
I don't care. I mean, if they do it like something like Batman Begins, where it's not just a regurgitated origin story, but it's, you know, really setting up the world.
If they made Superman a ninja like Batman, then I would be okay
with
that.
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Zack Snyder's directing, so I got to be excited about that.
Yeah, and with Christopher Nolan.
I know you haven't seen 300. Did you see Watchmen?
I did see Watchmen.
Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed aspects of it.
Right.
But I didn't, and I've never seen it since I watched it at the theater.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Watchmen graphic novel.
Oh, I did personally like the graphic novel.
In my opinion, it's so bleak and so there's virtually nothing redeeming about it.
It was for its time, though.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but and I also have to give it credit because it allowed us to have a darker tone in comic books, mm-hmm. and it really broke some new ground there. But there's just nothing redeeming in the characters, which makes it a little tough as well. But maybe we'll do an episode on Watchmen someday.
Now that I think about it, I actually liked the rationale for the ending of the movie better than the graphic novel.
Yeah, a lot of people were upset about that, but
and they changed it. Care. But I kind of liked what they said in the movie better. It made more sense.
Yeah, there was one of the sequences I loved in the movie was where they were given kind of Dr. Manhattan's backstory.
Oh yeah,
and it was that was really cool.
In the graphic novel, though, that's one of the best individual issues.
Yeah,
because the way that his story is told is pretty cool.
It would be kind of sweet to be Dr. Manhattan.
Maybe we should do a Watchmen
episode. I'd have to read it again, but yeah.
Okay,
cool. Or we could watch the movie again.
So, Ben, I wanted to talk about the TV show V.
Okay. Fire away, Matt.
Okay, so V, I watched it during season one. I did not love it, but I stuck with it because the actor that played Juliet from Lost is in it.
Yep.
So I had the support. Then I watched the premiere episode of season two. I was not impressed.
Yep.
And thought, all right, I'm not going to worry about watching this every week. I'll catch up on Hulu. Well, earlier this week, I had a couple extra hours, so I thought I'd watch a couple of episodes of V. Guess what?
It's not on Hulu.
Did I tell you this already?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, it's not on Hulu. In fact, it says streaming rights have been taken away.
Oh, and that's stupid.
So then I went to abc.com to go watch V.
Not there.
It wasn't online anywhere. So that I said out loud to myself, self, I have now given up on V.
Matt, do you often talk to yourself out loud?
Pretty often. Just to clarify things, yeah, like, I'm not watching this show anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Does it make it more definitive in your mind?
Yes, yes. And so I've given up on V. And
good for you.
Shortly after that, I read that the season finale of V is going to end on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Even though they don't know if it's going to be renewed.
Unlikely that it will be renewed.
I know. So if you're watching V, I would tread wisely. I'm not sure what the phrase is.
Stop
watching it. Maybe you should just be careful.
Yeah. To me, V was a... It wasn't a terrible show. I stopped watching after season one.
Okay.
I just never started again with season two. I think it's still recording on my DVR, but I just have never desired to sit down and watch it.
So if any listeners are really into it, I'd like to hear how season two is going. Because I only watched the first episode.
I mean, the cast was amazing. Because you had Juliet, who you already mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then they had the guy who was Alex Krycek on the X-Files.
He was only in one episode, though.
Yeah, so but still, they had a lot of guys they were pulling in. The guy from 4400. Marina Baccarin.
Oh, from Firefly. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Speaking of her, I heard that she was one of the people in the running to play a character named Maria Hill.
Yes.
In the Avengers movie.
That would be so
and
sweet.
And she actually looks exactly like that character. Yep. But
the Wasp.
Not her. What? Maria Hill.
I thought Maria... No, I don't.
No, Wasp is...
Geek Point. Lost.
Van Nuys. What's her first name? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways. No, Maria Hill is... Nick Shields' second in command at Shield.
Yeah.
And the way that the actress looks in V, what's her name in real life?
Marina Bach or something.
And what was her character's name in Firefly? Nora?
Anara.
Yeah. Yeah. She, right now, with her haircut, looks exactly like Maria Hill. So I hope she gets cast. But the girl from How I Met Your Mother is actually kind of in first place right now for the casting.
Yeah, but Joss Whedon should just cast people he's worked with before.
Yeah, totally.
I love it when... directors do that where they just kind of have the same people they work with over and over again.
Christopher Nolan does that all the time.
Yep.
Speaking of which,
we have a little bit of Dark Knight Rises news because we are going to cover everything that is newsworthy or even not newsworthy about this movie because we are extremely excited about it.
I am very excited about this movie.
I can't freaking wait.
Because next year, oh man, next year is going to be so awesome. Avengers and Dark Knight Rises.
Oh yeah. So let's deal with the substantial stuff first, and then we'll talk about the rumor.
Yes.
So Joseph Gordon-Levitt has been cast in Dark Knight Rises.
Of Third Rock from the Sun fame.
Of Inception fame.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
500 Days of Summer.
Yes, great movie.
Yep.
So that's really exciting. A lot of people had thought he was going to be cast as a villain way mm-hmm. back when, and then Tom Hardy was cast instead. So
who do you think he could be?
I would still love to see Hugo Strange as another villain in the series.
But that's not what the rumors are suggesting.
That is not what the rumors are suggesting. The rumors are suggesting that Robin... Yep, that Robin.
When I read this,
I'm cringing right now.
When I read this, I was
Nolan. We trust in Nolan. We trust in Nolan. We trust in Nolan. We trust.
I was online reading news. I saw Robin might be in this movie, and I gasped. I was like, "No, why?" Not that I hate Robin. I know you hate Robin. I like the character Robin.
I
like the idea of him not being in the movies.
Yeah, so do I. Here's what's weird about this: Christopher Nolan has said in the past, Robin's not going to be in my series.
And Christian Bale said,
I will not work in the series if Robin is in it, which is pretty intense. So this is why I got to believe if Nolan's putting Robin in the series, he has a really good way of doing it.
But it's just a rumor. It might not even happen.
Yeah.
They might just be messing with us.
It is a rumor. The other weird twist on the rumor is that some people were thinking, because the rumor came from somebody who was connected with the production, sent out an email mm-hmm. or something like that. It was some weird spy report, and it just mentioned something about Robin's base. Some people think that what that's referring to is that Robin Williams has been cast as Hugo Strange. That's another rumor that's out there.
I heard that.
Yeah.
You know what would be the best move? If they are going to cast a Robin, make him a villain.
Oh.
And mess with it. That would be good.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Though, I do got to say, if they're going to bring Robin into the series, Joseph Gordon-Levitt could be a pretty sweet Robin.
He's a good actor.
I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
That's it. I think you heard it first. Robin will be the villain in the next Batman movie.
Hey, if that turns out to be the case, we're going to have such an awesome party.
Yeah.
Patting ourselves on the back a year and a half from now.
Yeah.
That would seriously be the greatest twist ever.
Definitely. If they're going to use the character Robin, except for Robin's a lame villain name.
It doesn't matter.
I don't buy
it. Because he's an established character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Or if he shows up as a good guy and dies properly. Either one of those would be pretty sweet. All right. So next, we're not going to talk about the Super Bowl today because we are sci-fi and not football related. But there were a lot of cool movie trailers in the Super Bowl last night. What did you think?
I was super excited to see Captain America and...
Did you know Tommy Lee Jones was in Captain America?
I did.
I had no idea, and then I was watching the trailer online today. I was like, that's Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah,
I was medium excited to see Thor. I mean...
Looks pretty cool. I'm getting excited about Thor.
That movie comes out my birthday weekend, so I have big plans for all of us to go see it.
Totally.
But I'm way more excited for Captain America.
Yeah. The one that looked really sweet to me, though, was Super 8.
Super 8, yes. And this is the first commercial that's ever existed for Super 8, other than that one... strange trailer where just a train went by and there was something inside a car. But
this movie looks good.
I think it's going to be good, obviously, because J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg are awesome. But this trailer that they showed last night revealed nothing about the plot.
No, but it gave you a sense of the tone of the movie and mm-hmm. of the atmosphere that they're going for. And you could tell it's a period piece now, and we could tell a few things about that. And I got to say that with the tone they're going for, combined with it being kind of an alien monster movie, looked pretty sweet.
What do you think Super 8 means?
I have no idea.
There is an old type of like film reel or camera that I think it might have something to do with that.
Could be. We'll see. The other trailer that I got to mention because I really, really bashed this series a couple episodes ago was the new trailer for Pirates 4.
Yeah.
Against my better judgment, I am getting excited about this movie.
What is piquing your interest?
The fact that there's a new director gives me a lot of hope that it could be good. Ian McShane looks really, really good as Blackbeard.
Mm-hmm.
I think that not having Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley in the cast...
Yeah, that's going to help.
I've ranted about Pirates 3 before. You can go on YouTube and see the clip.
Yeah.
You know how much I hate that movie. I got to say, though, this is looking really, really good.
I think it's got some pretty good potential.
I am cautiously optimistic. Now, if I go to the theater and it sucks, you better believe I'm coming in front of this microphone and I'm going to scream my head off about how terrible it was, if it deserves it.
Well, how about this? We'll go together and we'll do an instant reaction.
Oh, yeah. And then if it's bad, I'm going to have to rant on here, too. Because one rant will not be enough if I have to sit through another terrible Pirates movie.
Okay.
But it looks kind of good. I'm kind of excited about it.
This year of movies is shaping up to be a great one.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of this year, bad news from the Sci-Fi Christian. We're not going to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
It's official.
It is official.
It got sold out.
Yes.
We were really not on the ball, and we kind of were wavering, and then...
But next year. Next year.
So, 2012.
2012.
Oh, right before the world ends. Perfect.
Right before Dark Knight Rises comes out.
Oh. Okay. So, 2012, mark your calendars, listeners. Meet us in San Diego for Comic-Con 2012.
Yeah. The other thing was we just kind of started to get too many trips going this year. I'm actually going to Israel in 2 weeks.
And we are both going to Colorado for a missions trip in May.
So we got stuff.
A lot of stuff coming up.
That's okay, though. Next year. But maybe we will try and get to another con sometime in the next year or
so. That sounds fun.
It would be awesome. A couple other news items for us. You wanted to talk about Terra Nova.
Oh, real quick. Terra Nova was a show that was supposed to start during this winter season right now by Steven Spielberg on Fox about, here's what I think it's about. There's a family or some people that have to travel from the future to go back to the past to like dinosaur time.
Yeah.
And anytime dinosaurs come up, I automatically start to think, kind of lame. Jurassic Park, yes. But I think it's going to be good. So anyways, it was not supposed to... Then they postponed it to next fall. But last night I saw a commercial for it and they're saying May.
Does it look good?
I think it looks pretty good. I'll check it out for sure.
I love the Jurassic Park theme.
Good.
It's so good.
So do you know anything about Terra Nova?
No, it looks pretty cool. Yeah. I'm on board with Steven Spielberg.
Did you see
Spielberg
the commercial last night?
I have not, but okay. Hey, Steven Spielberg and dinosaurs. Can't go wrong.
Good.
So, I'm psyched about that. There is a new show coming to NBC this fall, I believe.
A new show?
Oh, yes. Called REM, and I'm intrigued because it is being described as Inception-like. I don't know anything about it besides that.
Inception-light?
Like.
Okay.
Which, I gotta say, Inception is one of the greatest movies I've seen in a long, long time. I loved that movie so much.
That was
so,
a good one.
To have a movie that's kind of like Inception... could be awesome. Or a TV show. Mm-hmm. Let's like Inception the show. That would be so sweet.
Yes, hopefully it's as good as the movie.
Definitely. And then our final piece of news. This is cause for major celebration. Geeks everywhere, get ready to be on your feet and applaud the much delayed, much anticipated start date for The Hobbit has been set. March 21st.
So, The Hobbit will start recording? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's going to finally start filming. And this is so big because, like, you got to think of what's been going on with this production. That you bring Guillermo del Toro on, and then he leaves, and it looks like it's never even going to happen. And so, you know, it looks like this thing's just not ever going to actually take off. And then Peter Jackson starts to take over. And then there's labor disagreements between the New Zealand Actors Guild or whatever it was and the studio. And they get into a big fight. And then that finally gets resolved. And okay, we're going forward. And then Peter Jackson gets stomach ulcers. And so it gets delayed again a few weeks ago. And now it's finally starting. A month and a half from now, the two movie series of The Hobbit will be filming. This is a good day for geeks everywhere.
And the predicted release dates are?
I have no idea.
I think it's Christmas 2013 and Christmas 2014.
Well, that's still a long ways away, and I wish it was sooner. I really wish it was 2012. That kind of sucks.
Yeah. It's coming, don't worry.
Yeah, but not soon enough. You know, this year is like the 1 year anniversary of Fellowship of the Ring. So that's kind of cool.
Tenure?
Or did I say 1 year?
Yeah.
Yes, it came out last year, everyone.
Yeah, the 10-year anniversary.
Tenure, yeah.
That's true. How time flies.
I remember being in the midnight showing at the Mall of America movie theater for The Fellowship of the Ring.
Let's see.
And seeing all of these characters who I had imagined and read about for years and years and years finally coming to life in front of me. It was incredible.
Do you want to know my reaction when I first saw it? Keep in mind, I've never read the books.
It's just going to make me angry again.
No, I don't think so.
I probably will.
There I was in beautiful Mountain View, Minnesota. mm-hmm. at the movie theater. I don't think I went to the midnight showing, but it definitely was nighttime. And it gets to the end of the movie. And keep in mind, I know that it's a trilogy, so I know that there's more to come.
Yes.
But usually, even in trilogies, there's some sort of resolution at the end of each act.
Right.
So it gets to the end. Frodo and Sam are, like, looking out on the horizon or on a cliff or something.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it went to credits, and I was like, WTF. I couldn't believe it ended. And I was shocked and dismayed. So the way I felt about the end of that made me kind of not like it. But then Two Towers.
What?
No, I'm saying at the time. But Two Towers ended up being hilarious and awesome.
Two Towers is my least favorite of the three.
But didn't you think it was pretty funny?
I hated the fact that they used Gimli as comic relief. That's like my least favorite thing.
So is he not like that in the books?
Not at all. They ruined his character.
Oh, yeah, because he was really funny.
Like, I love the movies, and they were really, really well done. But in terms of stuff that's not even nitpicks, but stuff that really they did a horrible job on, Gimli's character is the worst part as far as the adaptation goes.
Hmm, okay.
He is nothing like
that's in the interesting.
Books, and they ruined his character, and it really ticks me off.
I never knew that, but I kind of liked him because of that.
No, it was terrible.
Well,
hated it.
It did good to reach out to people that hadn't read the books.
Well, people should go read the books.
I probably will have to eventually.
Excuse me that America is illiterate. Learn to read, people.
I've got Hobbit on my bookshelf. Yeah. It's on my list of... it will be in my next 15 books I read.
And speaking of books, you just started reading The Stand.
Oh, I did. I started reading The Stand, and...
are you loving it?
Yes.
All 5 pages so far?
Yep. I'm just going to take it a little bit at a time, because I know it's a long book, and I've got plenty of other things to read, but yes.
You should, like, live blog it.
Like, how far I am?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
Chapter 1. Interesting. Okay, yes. It's not a bad idea.
You could do like every 50 pages or so, put up a blog on the website or something.
It's not a bad idea. Maybe I will.
Yeah.
But when I'm all done, we have to do an episode about The Stand because do you remember what the very first podcast you and I ever talked about doing was?
The Lost Books of Lost podcast.
Yes, the Books of Lost podcast. And so after Lost was over, we were going to read all the books that Lost mentioned. We quickly decided not to do that because we did the Life Report instead.
Yes.
And now we're doing the Sci-Fi Christian, which is, I mean... we could do Books of Lost right here.
This is kind of the spiritual successor of that podcast, in a way.
So we could do Books of Lost here and there.
Totally.
So let's do an episode on The Stand.
Oh, we have to. And it's an 1,100-page book. Might be a two-parter.
Okay.
I mean,
deal.
There's a lot of stuff in
there. I'll read it as soon as I can, fans. And if you want to read along with us, let us know. And we can kind of maybe we'll bring some people in to talk about
The Stand. Hey, I'd reread it with you.
Start right now. I just started this week.
We could have like a schedule.
Oh, that will help me keep on track.
I will put together a schedule.
And then we can... Okay. Then
a light schedule, so it's not like maybe a few chapters a week or something like that.
Deal. You heard it here first, listeners. Join us for The Stand reading schedule.
Stand read-along.
This is what we'll call it. Put down your Bible, pick up The Stand.
I love it. Well, on that note, should we start talking about Jesus?
Well, yes. I mean, you've heard of Bible reading plans.
Yes.
We now have The Stand
reading plan.
Okay.
We should note that The Stand is extremely R-rated, so if you're easily offended, too bad for you.
Don't read it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get to the main topic.
I'm ready.
The top 5 messianic and sci-fi characters. Sorry. As Matt Anderson plays with his laptop.
No, I'm turning my laptop on because I have my list right here.
Yes.
I didn't know the volume was on. Sorry.
Very nice.
Do you want to do villains first or messiahs?
You know, it's up to me, but...
up to me?
Wait. Did I say that? I'm totally misspeaking today.
Well, it's up to me, so I think we should do villains so we can
It's up to you.
Villains, so yeah. We can end on a high note.
Okay, if you want to, but first I have a question for you.
Yes.
You can look through sci-fi fantasy. Actually, I have 2 questions for you. You can look through all these genres, and you'll find messianic and satanic characters all over the place. So 2 questions for you, Matt, before we get started.
Yes.
Number 1, why do these characters connect with us so much?
Because it's inside of us. We know innately that good and evil exist. And so these stories of a savior coming to help us or a person that's trying to tempt and corrupt us, this is something that we can relate to on the inside.
Totally.
It speaks to our very soul.
Yeah. I kind of thought in a few different categories as I was considering this question that there's kind of a psychological part to it, that it helps us, you know, just internalize with our own battle against, you know, sin and selfishness or whatever, and our desire to be good people. So I think we internalize it that way. And then there's also a cultural part of it where, as a culture, I think it helps us to reflect on what's going on in society, and those characters kind of can show us contemporary issues in that way. And then also what you're saying, the spiritual side of mm-hmm. things, that it shows us God's story, that, you know, this is speaking to us of deeper truths that God has written on the human heart because we're made in his image.
Good.
So it's cool stuff.
Do you want, Ben, before we really start digging into our list we have here, to tell everybody where we're coming from when making these lists?
What do you mean?
Like, here's the criteria.
Well, do you want my second question for you first?
Yes.
Okay. You forgot I had a second
question. I did.
Very nice. Second question number two. Are sci-fi...
Second question number two.
Jeez. I should just turn off my microphone okay. today, man. I'm so tired. Second question number two yes. is... Are sci-fi and fantasy, is genre fiction uniquely qualified to help us examine messianic and satanic characters? And if so, why?
I love the question, and I'm going to say it is.
I totally agree.
And the reason is because sci-fi genre, they can tackle issues that a regular everyday drama cannot.
Exactly.
And they can symbolize things in a crazy way that we can relate to better.
Yep.
And so I totally agree.
Yeah, I think that a big part of it for me is that, you know, when you're really close to yourself and you're just inside your own mind and everything, it's really hard to actually, you know, see your own issues and see what's going on. Same thing with society, that, you know, when we're in our culture, it's harder to see the issues when we're just looking at them from a purely dramatic perspective. But when we actually are able to kind of get outside of ourselves, see things in a different light, and be able to see things in kind of the fantasy or science fiction genre, which shows us our world but in a different way with enough changes where it doesn't feel quite so familiar, I think it better prepares us to be able to examine those issues, work through our own stuff individually, work through things as a culture, and then also spiritually, to go back to those three categories we were talking about a minute ago.
Yep.
I think it really is well suited because it's just far enough outside of ourselves to help us better look into our lives and understand ourselves.
Yeah, that is a great way to put it. It's just outside of ourselves.
It's really, really cool. I think of something like, this doesn't go so much to the messianic and satanic characters, but I think of something like Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what was so brilliant about that show is that what it says is it says human nature is the same all the time. So it helps us examine our own humanity, but it's because it's in a sci-fi setting, I think that it makes it a little bit easier for us to look at those characters and see ourselves reflected in them, as opposed to if it was just a straight drama.
Yeah.
So similar thing going on here.
Yeah, that's good.
Which is way cool. So you want to start with the devil characters.
I would love to.
Tell me what characteristics you were using to make your list of evil.
I will tell you mine, and then I would love to hear yours.
Absolutely. I have several for each category.
Here's what I looked at. I wanted to see somebody who was evil in a sense that they corrupted.
Yep.
They corrupted people. They corrupted the world. They seeped their evilness into others.
Totally.
I was also looking at... Let me look at my list. I was also looking at people that were bad to the core.
Yeah.
You know what I mean by that? Not the wishy-washy bad guys.
Right.
Like in Lost, Ben Linus was really bad, but he also had some really big redeeming things.
Yeah, Ben Linus was one I considered a little bit at first, but ultimately he couldn't make the cut.
Exactly.
He redeemed himself way too much.
Exactly. He's too redeemed.
And plus, you can kind of look at the series and you can make an argument for what he does actually being necessary and good mm-hmm. for a lot of his actions.
Let me see. What else did I have on my list? Yeah, so that's why, okay, here's another criteria just for me personally, and I don't know if you use the same criteria, but maybe you did subconsciously. I had to choose ones that, from properties that had special resonance with me.
Stuff that really connects with you at a heart level.
Yeah, so.
Totally.
I mean, I just mentioned Lost. Obviously, Lost is something that I'm really into, and you obviously really like Star Wars.
I do.
And so I'm guessing there's going to be some Star Wars things on your list, possibly, who knows.
I'm not going to even
tell
you.
Yeah, no spoilers.
No spoilers.
Oh, so, hey, well, speaking of spoilers, before we get too far into this episode.
Yes.
Just as a warning, when we do describe why we chose our characters, some of what we talk about might be spoilery.
But we'll try and keep it light.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Spoiler light.
So if you are somebody like me who doesn't like spoilers but isn't going to spontaneously combust when you hear them, then you should be okay. If your name is Matt Anderson or and you're like him, whose spoilers are literally torture for this man, then you might want to cover your ears at a couple parts.
Well, we'll tell what the property is. And if you know you're about to watch this TV show or watch this movie or read this book, then maybe just skip over that.
Well, part. But yeah, I mean, at the same time, I hope that people who maybe haven't read some of these will listen because it might make you intrigued about something you aren't going to read.
Exactly. Actually, when we did our top five properties, you really intrigued me with a few of your literature nominees.
We may be coming back to those. That reminds me of another name I need to add to my runners-up list.
And so I'm thinking my list is going to have more people from science fiction, movie, and television, whereas you might have many more book related entries, only because I know that you have a vast knowledge of sci-fi books that I do not have.
It's possible.
So that concludes my criteria.
So here are some of my characteristics. I totally agree with you that somebody who is destructive, who is bad to the core, I put down fallen, which I kind of think goes to that, where they're not just doing a few evil things, but where they're literally fallen. And I also meant by that somebody who maybe starts good and winds up bad to the core later. And well, you might have a few examples of that in my list. Somebody who's prideful or craves power would be another big one.
Hey, that's a good one.
Yeah, someone who either breeds confusion and tells lies or seeks to preserve lies and confusion in the world. Somebody who loves destruction for destruction's sake. And obviously the big one, someone who hates life.
Ooh.
Now, a couple of the ones that you mentioned, like a wishy-washy villain, a couple of the other filters I had on mine were anything that has to do with mental illness. Mm. Like, if we're dealing with somebody who's just insane, that didn't make the list. So, for example, I know this wouldn't be genre fiction quite as much. Maybe it would be horror a little bit, but like Silence of the Lambs. Hannibal Lecter, I would have a hard time putting on the list if we were doing that genre more, because he's more crazy.
Okay.
You know, he's a perfectly great human being who happens to be a little insane and eats people.
I have a question. Okay, yes. Great. What if they are bad, but they think that what they're doing is good? Where would you put them then?
You know, that's a good question, because I think that goes to with the whole insanity thing. You have to kind of take it on a case-by-case basis. You know, because obviously a name that will probably be on my list, the Joker, you know, he's insane. But yet he's also evil to the core. It's not just his insanity. There's innate evil inside of him. So somebody who thinks they're doing good, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd have to hear an example, because it could be somebody who isn't so much a devil figure, but they wind up in the antagonist role because they really genuinely think they're doing the right thing.
I've been going over my list all the way up until sitting here, kind of trying to renumber them. And there, I do have a person in mind who, I don't know if he's really my number five, but this might be a good example to kick us off.
I have one other filter that I want to share first.
Okay, go ahead.
Anything that is more of like an animal characteristic. For example, I was discussing this list with my wife because she's a sci-fi fantasy fan as well, and she had brought up the xenomorphs from Aliens, who are the aliens.
You're talking about them.
Yeah. And anything like that where they're more, you know, kind of animal and in nature, there has to be a will behind it. It has to be, rather than just kind of that raw primal force, it has to actually have an individual in there to be considered a devil character.
Okay, so they would not count then.
They would not count. But so that's it for my criteria. Go ahead and kick us off, Matt. Number five.
Number five. And this person, he's definitely bad, but what he's doing, he thinks is for the betterment of his kind.
I'm very intrigued.
Magneto of the X-Men.
Ooh.
Now, Magneto is evil. What he promotes is genocide.
Yes.
He wants to kill humans at the betterment of mutant kind.
Yes.
He corrupts other mutants by getting them to join his brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
He turns people that were good bad. He's a tempter.
Ooh.
He tempts people to join his side. But on the flip side, why I was wondering if I should even put him on the list is Magneto really thinks he's on the right side.
Yes, he does.
And in fact, him and Professor X have a special relationship, to the point where What was that face for?
What type of relationship?
A very special best friendship.
Oh, okay.
To the point where I think there's a part of him that really doesn't want Xavier to get harmed in the battle, even though in some of the earlier issues, I wouldn't say that's true, where Magneto first appeared, he was just all bad.
But then they developed a character.
As they developed the character, we saw this new side of him. So Magneto, I think, is a good...
He's a good borderline character.
Yeah, he's a good villain. Is he the devil? I don't know if he's a devil, but he is evil. He is promoting genocide, which is what Hitler did, and Hitler is...
He certainly meets some of those characteristics. Yeah, totally.
Okay.
My number five, Darth Vader.
Darth Vader?
Another borderline character. If you haven't seen Return of the Jedi, you can turn off your iPod and go watch it, because there's really no excuse. But obviously, Darth Vader redeems himself at the end of Return of the Jedi.
That's what I'm talking about.
Kills the Emperor. But here are some of my characteristics. That he's fallen.
Okay.
To me, this was a really, really big one. Part of what you'll find as we go through this list is that I'm really intrigued by characters who start good and wind up corrupted and fallen as a result of that. And Vader makes my list over Emperor Palpatine for that reason, that he's a far more interesting character because of the fact that he started good and wound up evil as a result. And then we see things that, like, he has a complete disregard for human life, willfully kills his own officers, is willing to, you know, blow up Alderaan to help interrogate Princess Leia. Darth Vader is a pretty bad dude, and he commits genocide throughout the galaxy. Yes, he redeems himself at the end, and we may get back to that a little bit later on in the show, and when we start talking about messianic characters. But I think that there is enough bad there, and his fall is intriguing enough to me to give him the number five spot on my list.
Darth Vader was literally the first person I thought about.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was really torn, because when I think Darth Vader, of course you see the whole timeline of events.
Yep.
But in the end, he came through.
He did.
So it was tough for me to make him the devil.
So we both kind of started with borderline characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we going to get more evil from there, do you think? Let's find out.
My next person.
Number four.
My next person is super evil.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'm almost positive you've never heard of them.
Okay.
Have you?
I'm intrigued.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going back to one of my favorite Christian authors, Ted Dekker.
Oh, no, I have not heard of him.
I know. So
we actually have a fan question about Ted Dekker
later
on in the show.
Great.
Yeah.
So in the Ted Dekker books, of course, I've talked about the Circle Trilogy, which now has four books, so it's not quite a trilogy anymore.
The Square Trilogy.
Yep. So that's Black, Red, White, and Green. Love those books. And an offshoot series are called the Paradise Novels.
Mm-hmm.
And this includes Showdown, Saint, and Sinner.
Okay.
And in the book Showdown, we're introduced to a character named Marsuvius Black.
And he's pretty bad.
He's super bad. Nice. In fact, I knew you wouldn't know him, so I just wrote out a quick description of what he does. Actually, I found it online and copied and pasted it.
Welcome to the plagiarism report with Matt Anderson.
So I'm going to read this. And some of this is more setting up the story, a little bit spoilery, but nothing serious. Marsuvius Black was a teacher at the Project Showdown Monastery above Paradise, Colorado. Secretly, he tempted all the children to enter the forbidden dungeons and write in the books of history. So there's a lot to know about this.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that whatever the children wrote would come true.
Oh, very nice.
So he's tempting, making them do evil.
He corrupts innocents as well.
And then he goes even into the town of Paradise, Colorado itself, acting as a preacher, proclaiming hope and grace, using healing, in quotes, Black gets the attention of everyone in the town and soon casts them under his spell.
So he also corrupts Christianity, gives people a corrupt version of the gospel as well. That's pretty powerful.
Some of the stuff I read in Showdown are burned in my mind. The images that this guy gets just what he gets to happen in the book, it's messed up.
Yeah. I might have to read that. That sounds intriguing.
So, Marsuvius Black,
My number four is Randall Flagg from the Dark Tower series and The Stand.
Okay.
I will not go into spoilers here.
You, me, and Ben have talked about this off air because I'm in the middle of this book.
Yeah, this will not spoil anything. I'm not going to tell you anything about what he does.
Okay.
I'll just describe him. Randall Flagg is bad through and through. he establishes his power base off of destruction, off of the deaths of millions and millions of people.
Will I know as soon as I meet this character that he's bad, or will they first introduce him as a regular character?
No, you'll know pretty soon.
Okay.
I mean, I forgot if it's extremely clear in the first scene or not, but it becomes very, very clear that this is the villain.
Okay.
Randall Flagg, the Stand, the whole idea of the Stand is the battle between good and evil. That's why it's called the Stand, right?
Okay, yep. And Lost took from this book, which is why I want to read it so bad.
Totally. Randall Flagg is entirely evil. This guy is incredibly bad. His appearances in the Dark Tower series are a little bit more disappointing, but at the same time, he still is a really, really evil guy. I'm trying not to give spoilers, which is why I just keep saying that he's bad.
No, I'm glad. But, I would appreciate it.
Yeah. So if you've read The Stand, you totally know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you should. And you can do The Stand read along with us and figure out for yourself just how bad Randall Flagg is.
Join The Stand reading plan.
Yes.
Put down the Bible, pick up The Stand.
Love it.
Are you
number
ready
three.
My number three, in honor of our debate last week, the White Witch.
Oh, great character.
She is evil.
Oh, yeah.
So evil. I actually have a little reading to do.
Very nice.
Do you mind? This is from the book that I read last week when talking about Narnia. There's a bunch of stuff. Did you know that she, I don't remember this from the Narnia books, that she isn't human. She's half djinn and half giantess.
That is from The Magician's Nephew, where we get her backstory.
Her mother was Lilith, a female demon who originated from Babylonian and ancient Hebrew mythology.
Yep.
This is a non-biblical tradition. The mythical Lilith is somewhat of a vampire seeking out children to murder and harming women who are giving birth.
Yeah, she's so bad.
Okay, so here it is. Jadis, which is the White Queen's real name,
yep,
is symbolic of Satan in a number of ways. First, her attempts to tempt Diggory at the Tree of Protection resembles Eve's temptation by the serpent in the Garden of Evil.
That is also from The Magician's Nephew.
Second, her 100-year stranglehold over Narnia symbolizes the temporary power of Satan in the world.
Yeah.
Third, her victory over Aslan before his resurrection symbolizes the fleeting victory that Satan has over Jesus Christ on the cross before he was resurrected.
Can I go back to point number two really quick? Because that's like one of my favorite images from Narnia.
The 100-year stranglehold?
Oh, yeah.
Turning everyone into stone? She was so bad.
She's... But just the whole imagery that Lewis uses there of winter, and then as Aslan starts to show up, the thaw happens. It's so powerful.
Yeah.
It really underscores just how evil she is.
She is bad.
Yeah.
So she was my number three.
Great number three. My number three is Mayor Wilkins from season 3 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Dang it, I'm not that far.
Don't worry. I won't give spoilers, but I'm going to describe him a little bit more. Mayor Wilkins is a really, really nice guy. He's a very loving man. He's a very caring man. He is a family guy. Okay. He is cheerful and happy, and he is 100% evil. Everything about this guy is bad.
And that is what makes him such an intriguing villain, that he is the corruption of everything that's good, and he represents that so much that he takes all of these good and admirable qualities and he twists them with his evil. In fact, there's one point in the series, and this really underscores how bad he is, where he comes into somebody's life who's desperate for a father figure in her life, and he becomes that father figure for her. And because he embodies all of these wonderful qualities, but in a twisted way, he ultimately winds up dragging this person down with him.
Hmm.
So he not only corrupts what is evil, but he takes other people who are desperate for healing, offers them false versions of what they need, and then drags them down and corrupts them.
Well, it sounds fascinating stuff.
He is very, very evil.
Good.
Number two.
My number two. Now, man, I'm really, even up until right now, I'm going back and forth on two and one, but I'm just going to give it to you the way I have it here on my laptop.
Cool.
Number two, the Joker.
Ooh. I'm really curious about who your number one is then.
He's an evil clown who kills people. He has no sense of remorse at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen him in lots of different incarnations.
Yep.
And I think most of the mainstream audience would relate to The Dark Knight. I mean,
oh, totally.
Christopher Nolan's depiction of the Joker is scary.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but at the same time, it's strange because, I mean, as a viewer, you almost like them to be that evil. I don't know why that is, but
Well, that's what we were talking about at the beginning, that these types of characters help us to process stuff and to reflect on God's story and all of those reasons.
So, I mean...
Gotta have a good villain.
Yeah, I mean, he corrupts things, obviously. He corrupts good people. Tempts others to join him in his fight against Batman and other good things. So, he's all around totally bad.
Yeah, I have a lot to say about the Joker, but I am...
Not going to say it.
Not
going to
say it right now.
For one more round.
Probably. Okay. Number two for me, Saruman from Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And again, this is one where I chose the lesser villain over the greater villain because I find him more intriguing.
Okay.
I did not choose Sauron. I chose Saruman. Like Darth Vader, he is corrupted. He is fallen. And I find that far more intriguing. Somebody who joined up to fight evil... his mission was to be a force for good. It ultimately was corrupted by that, ultimately falls and becomes a force for evil. I find that type of character absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. So Saruman, hands down, earns a number two spot. And unlike Darth Vader, he never redeems himself. He's evil through and through. Especially one of the things that didn't make it into the movies, it's in the books, mm-hmm. is when they come back, Saruman is actually... gain control of the Shire,
mm-hmm.
and he is basically destroying the Shire.
All the hobbits.
When Frodo and Sam and the others get back, they find Saruman there.
Really?
And it's super powerful.
Why did they show it in the movie?
Because like everything's already done, it would have been super anticlimactic in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the book, it's an incredibly powerful sequence where it really just underscores that they've sacrificed so much, and then they return and their home is in ruins because of this man. Because mm-hmm. he destroys and he kills, and it's absolutely a heartbreaking section of the book.
What happens to him in the movie? I can't remember.
He died in you never see him die in the theatrical cuts, but if you've seen the extended edition, there's like a 10-minute sequence added to the beginning of Return of the King where he dies and he falls off Orthanc, which is his tower.
Oh, he falls like the Emperor.
A little bit, yes.
Interesting.
What happens in the books is that he stays locked in the tower and then eventually escapes and goes to the Shire, and he's killed in the Shire instead.
Okay.
So, a absolutely incredible section. I wish it could have been in the film, but I understand why it wasn't there.
Good.
And number one.
My number one most evil person is the Emperor.
The Emperor.
Darth Sidious.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, when I first thought of this list, Darth Vader came to my mind. I was like, wait, no, he's not bad.
Yeah.
And he is bad, but he wasn't completely bad. Who was? The Emperor. Just close your eyes, listeners, and picture his face. And then he's like shooting through his fingers, lightning. I mean, okay, this guy, in all six movies, totally, totally bad. Wait, was he in...
He's not four? In A New Hope.
Okay.
And he's only has a holograph in one scene in Empire Strikes Back.
Still. Evil to the core.
Here's why I couldn't have him on my list. He's a runner-up for me, but he's not on my main list for a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm mostly an original trilogy guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as... Though he is one of the best parts of the prequels, by far. Because I love the original trilogy so much more, and he's hardly in it, he just isn't developed enough as a character to be super intriguing to me.
I wanted to speak on that, because you had mentioned earlier that you picked Darth Vader because you thought he was the more interesting of the two.
Absolutely.
Which, I can see that, and I can see how... interesting, you know, I could see how that would sway you, but when I look at who is actually evil, even if Emperor is not the most evil person, or sorry, the most interesting person, he by far is the most evil. He's just bad. I mean, and if you look at what he did to Anakin, I mean, really playing him from almost day one, corrupting this poor, poor child who was the one.
Yeah, I'll tell you the scene I love in the prequels is in Revenge of the Sith when the Jedi figure it out and they come to his office to arrest him, and by the order of the Senate, and then, I am the Senate, and he pulls out his lips. Yeah. It's like, yeah, this is so awesome.
No, I like when he gets Dooku, or so Anakin and Dooku are fighting, and he's like, kill him!
Yes.
Kill him! And then he does, and then Anakin becomes his new apprentice. Mm-hmm. That was...
I'm not going to sit here and pretend like the Emperor isn't a great villain. He's incredible. But,
Darth Vader, by far more likable.
Yep.
Emperor, by far more evil.
Yeah, and for me, I was rating more who do I find the most intriguing characters rather than the most evil.
That's good.
So, but you make a great case for him. So I don't fault you at all for that. My number one, no surprise here,
oh.
The Joker.
Yeah,
and
this is a good choice.
Specifically the Dark Knight iteration of the Joker. Here's why. The church, one of the churches we went to before Epic, when we first got married, the pastor said something
about... Not me and you. You and your wife.
Me and my wife, yes. Matt and I are not yet married. yet.
Yes.
Someday. Possibly.
No, not possible.
not possible.
Please continue.
One of the things a pastor, he was speaking about the devil, and he said, I don't think the devil's actually interested in winning. I think he knows that he's done. And right now, all he's interested in is taking as many people down with him as he can. That's the Joker in Dark Knight. He doesn't care about anything. He doesn't want money. He doesn't want power. He just wants to kill and destroy. And to me, that desire for nothing but chaos and destruction is the most pure form of evil I've ever seen in a movie or a book. It absolutely floored me. You could take any other iteration of the Joker out of the equation based on that characterization alone. He makes number one on my list. And he's done some pretty evil things beyond that in the comic books. But just that pure, raw, I want nothing but to kill and destroy.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the devil, hands down.
Yes, I mean, even his face is devilish.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So should we list off a few quick runners-ups before we move on to our messianic characters?
I would love to.
Tell me your runner-ups, Matt.
Well, I had a few here. I had on my list somebody who, again, sort of like Magneto, is to me like a borderline villain.
Yes.
From a show I loved growing up, The X-Files.
Oh.
The cigarette-smoking man.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, man.
Great villain.
Such a good bad guy.
Who else you got?
I also put somebody out... As you know, I love Lost, and I don't want to spoil anything about this character, so I'm only going to refer to him as the Man in Black.
Yep.
And I almost...
Don't need to say anymore.
Nope, I almost put him on my list, but I didn't want to describe him at all for anybody who hasn't seen Lost.
But certainly a great villain.
Totally evil.
Yes.
And I have one more from the Circle Trilogy. I keep calling it that because that's what I always call it, but Black, Red, White, Green, there was a basically... It was the Satan character, kind of like White Witch in there, and this character's name is Tile. And I don't really want to say anything about him other than, once you read it, you'll know why I picked him.
Yes. For my runners-up, I had a couple names we already talked about, Sauron and Palpatine.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of us had Sauron, but I discussed him a little bit with Saruman. Mm-hmm. I also had Agent Smith.
Oh, yeah, Agent Smith.
The reason he couldn't make my top five is because he's a program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, He's not
he's
so much...
He's programmed to be bad.
He's programmed to be bad.
But not even be bad. He was programmed to keep the Matrix running.
And that's why he's on my runner-up. Because one of my criteria is the preservation of lies.
Mm-hmm.
He's all about lies, all about deceiving people.
Okay.
That's what his entire existence is towards that end. So even though he's a little bit too... Because he's a program, he isn't enough of an individual to make my list.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about him is geared toward... That geared toward trapping people and keeping them under bondage.
I feel bad for the other agents.
Yeah.
Nobody ever remembers them.
No, they get killed pretty easily. Another one, similar reasons as Agent Smith why I couldn't make my top five, but a great character, Brother Cavill from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
The mastermind behind the Cylons.
Oh, how could I forget?
He's a great character, but again, our program, so doesn't quite make the cut. And then one more. And this one makes the cut because I don't know enough about him yet.
Oh.
The Adversary from Fables.
Oh.
Which you and I are reading.
Yes.
We don't know
far
about
too
him.
Early to
it's
put him
way
on the
too early. But he's a super intriguing character, even though we have yet to meet him in the series.
Yeah, I mean, me and Ben are... Ben is on Volume 5,
yep.
And I'm on Volume 4.
Yep.
And he's still a mysterious character, but clearly evil.
Clearly evil, and you know everything that's been implied as far as what he's done is totally what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Destruction, you know, bondage, everything. So I'm really excited to see how the Adversary develops, but for now, he remains on my list.
Good work.
I did want to highlight, since we had mentioned Scott's list,
yeah.
A couple of characters we haven't talked about from him. He had Darth Sidious, Sauron, we already talked about. He had the Joker on his list, and then two... ones that we haven't talked about, the Master from Doctor Who, and I don't watch Doctor Who.
I've seen parts of Doctor Who, but I also I don't watch it enough to know who that is.
Yeah, so I'm sure he's evil, but we're not going to say anything about him.
One of our friends, BJ, is really into Doctor Who. Maybe we should check it out.
We can ask BJ. And then Baron Vladimir Harkonnen from Dune.
Oh, I haven't read Dune.
Very evil guy.
Okay.
But, so, great character. I don't know if I'd call him necessarily so much a strong devil character in my mind, but I can totally see why Scott had him on his list.
With
evil guy.
Can you talk a little bit more about that without spoiling why you wouldn't see him as devil, or would it be too spoilery for me?
To me, I don't know how purely evil he is. I think that his motives, or maybe I just haven't read the series recently enough to be able to see this, but I think his motives are more political. In terms of, he's obviously a power-hungry guy. He is evil in those ways, but he isn't quite as, you know, destructive and genocidal as maybe some of the other people we've talked about. But definitely a bad guy.
Good.
Great character, too.
Good.
Ready to move on to messianic figures.
I would love to go on to the messiahs. The messiahs.
Give me some of your criteria, Matt, for how you chose your list.
Criteria would be...
First thing, criteria?
Oh, my gosh. The first one that came to my mind was sacrifice. Yeah, of course, with Jesus, he actually gave up his life and resurrected it and came back from the dead. But I'm looking at a sacrifice in a big way. It can't just be like... He sacrificed a sandwich one day to go help somebody.
Yeah,
He has to sacrifice something big. that was a good example, right?
That was a terrible example.
So, sure, it could be that he or she sacrificed their lives, or
yes.
It could be that they sacrificed some chunk of their lives, such as, I'll save it. So,
okay. What other criteria do you have?
Criteria. Bringers of truth.
Got that one as well.
You got that on your list?
You're 2 for 2 so far for me.
All right. And they have to come into a scene and drastically change it for the better.
Yep. Let's see if I had that one. I talked about Christ figures are often incarnate, that they come from outside and in. They enter into a foreign world that they're not a part of, but they become part of the people who are in the world. Fulfills a prophecy was one of the ones I had on my list, but often there's a prophetic quality to it. That wasn't a huge one, but it certainly fits with a couple of the characters. Preserves life, obviously the big one. And then a willingness to bear other people's burdens.
Oh, that's good.
Well, should we get to it?
Yep, I am moving one of my runners up into place and changing who I had.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I just, as we're going over the list, and as we talked about some things earlier, I just...
Will you tell us who will you change from when we're all done?
Yep.
Okay.
I'll do it right now. I'll tell you, do you want my runner-up right now?
Sure. Is it number 5?
Nope. It's number 6.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because it's a runner-up. Okay. Who is... Let's do runner-ups last.
Okay.
So give me number 5.
Number 5.
This would be the person you just moved onto your list, I assume.
Yep. Number 5. Captain America.
Interesting.
I know. And you gave a face, and you seemed shocked.
No, I want to hear your reasoning behind this. I don't quite see it myself just yet.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm prepared to tell you everything.
Okay.
Captain America, in the continuity as it stands today, was a World War II hero.
Yes.
Who, in the course of battle, was thought dead.
Yes.
But was actually fell into the freezing ocean, frozen in time... and reanimated some 20 years later.
But is that really a resurrection?
Just wait until you hear the rest.
Okay.
He came in, joined the Avengers, who were the ones that kind of helped bring him out of his frozenness. He came in and instantly changed things for the better. He was the much-needed leader of not just the Avengers, but if you look at the Marvel Universe, of course people like Spider-Man and currently Iron Man because of the movies are the well-known characters. But if you look at who is all around the leader, the, you could say, savior of the Marvel Universe, all heads turn to Captain America to save the day.
He's definitely the head of the Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know who's going to be bringing the truth, Captain America is a man you can count on. So, like I said, he was my runner-up.
Yep, bit of a borderline, but
yes,
good argument for him.
Good.
My number 5 is Angel from Buffy and Angel.
Okay.
Now, Angel is a vampire, but he has a soul.
Okay.
Whereas most vampires obviously have a demon inside of them. Instead, Angel's soul has been restored by a curse that he was given 150 years ago. Here's the twist on Angel.
Okay.
Angel remains good, and he keeps his soul as long as he never experiences perfect happiness.
Oh, no.
The second Angel experiences perfect happiness, he turns evil.
Oh, no.
So... right here we have a messianic quality that he is willing to stay in a painful and difficult place in order to help other people. He embraces his pain and his suffering so that he can do good in the world and bring redemption to humanity. He also is incarnate in the sense that he lives among people who are not his own, but he protects people and individuals, humans, even though he is not one of them. He chooses to live among them. Really a powerful character. And there's a scene in towards the end of Angel Season 1, and I'll be very vague here, but where he somebody is trying to kill him, and this is somebody who has become corrupted, and this person, in the midst of trying to hunt down Angel, absolutely breaks down emotionally and comes to repentance, and he has every reason in the world to kill this person.
Okay.
And instead, he shows this individual grace, and it's one of the most powerful scenes of grace I've ever seen.
Wow.
In a film or TV show. It's absolutely incredible. Really, really powerful stuff.
Good.
So Angel makes my number 5.
Very nice.
Number 4.
Number 4 for me, a character from a Ted Decker book called... I mean, when it comes to science fiction genre reading, in the recent years, I've read all sorts of Ted Decker.
Yes.
So I
couldn't tell.
Yeah. So... there's a character named Thomas Hunter who comes into the story black, just an everyday man like you and me, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Wakes up in a world not his own and takes actions to help that world. And I don't want to really tell too much about it because I know you haven't read it.
Yes.
But there's different sacrifices he has to make in order to help both sides because it's our world and... the alternate universe.
Cool.
So, Thomas Hunter, number 4.
Good stuff. My number 4, Sam from Lord of Light.
Dang it. This is the one
I'm going to read. This is another book you haven't read yet.
Is this the one that I want to read?
Maybe we'll do the Lord of Light read-along after The Stand.
Is that the one about the Hindu?
Yeah, it's the Roger Sahai's name.
Okay, I have to stop listening then.
No, I'll be vague.
Okay.
Because I already explained all of this.
I'm about to start reading this book.
You are?
Well, no.
No.
But it's not
if you're going to read it after you're done with The Stand, that's like 2 years from now at your reading speed, man. So you'll forget all of this by then. Sam from Lord of Light. Remember, the premise of Lord of Light, as I explained in our first episode, is that way in the future, there's a small group of humans who have basically grabbed control of all technology. They've made everyone else primitive and set themselves up as gods, literally as the Hindu pantheon. What Sam does in Lord of Light is he rebels against them, and he chooses to bring freedom to the people that they have oppressed. And he does this by descending to those people and living among them. So there's the incarnation right there. He chooses to live among them. He fights the evil forces that are keeping the people in bondage and seeks to bring freedom and truth to a people who've been enslaved. Really powerful character.
That's good. You've been stressing the incarnation a lot more than I have, and I like that. So to go back to my last one, Thomas Hunter... he became one of the people on the other side.
There you go. Good. Incarnation.
Incarnation.
Number 3.
Number 3. I really like this character. He saved the day. His name is Skywalker. Luke. Skywalker.
Luke.
Yeah, so...
I thought about this, and I couldn't quite convince myself that Luke was messianic. So give me the argument.
Here's the argument.
Because I want to be convinced here.
Yes, I want you to be convinced. Luke... it's not necessarily that he had to be forced into joining the good team. He wanted to, but he felt like he should stay on the farm. And then situations arose so that he didn't have to stay on the farm anymore.
Yes.
And he was able to live out this desire he had to go and save the day. So without Luke, without his central saviorness,
yeah,
I don't think that we would have seen the redemption of Darth Vader, the destruction of the Empire.
That's true.
So let's talk about incarnation. Did he really change himself? I guess he learned how to be a Jedi. I don't know if we can say he incarnated.
Probably not, but I don't think the characters have to fit every single character.
He brought the truth of the Force and the Jedi way.
That's true. You convinced me.
Well, let's talk about sacrifice. Can you think of a way that he actually sacrificed other than his hand?
Yeah. Wish he got a new one 5 minutes later in the movie.
Yeah.
The sacrifice isn't there so much for me. But, again, he doesn't have to fulfill every category. But
I think that the people of the Rebellion would say Luke was the Messiah for them.
You could look at the scene after him with his fight with Vader in Cloud City where he falls down the shaft as being symbolic of death, because that's kind of a symbol Lucas uses. When Jedi's die, they fall down shafts. But so Luke descends and then comes back again. You could see that as a symbolic death and resurrection thing going on there.
So I really like Luke.
Hey, I'm convinced.
Good
choice, Matt.
Thank you.
Number 3 for me, Batman.
Batman. Tell me why.
A few reasons. Number one, we're talking about a guy who could have the dream life. He's a billionaire. Mm-hmm. And he leaves all of that behind to serve others. Particularly, he uses his wealth in order to fight evil, in order to rescue people and bring hope to a city that has none. To me, that's really, really powerful. But what pushes Batman over the top for me is the final scenes of The Dark Knight, when basically Gordon is... they're talking about how the city needs to believe in the hero of Harvey Dent. Mm-hmm. And so Batman takes on Harvey Dent's sin, basically, onto himself, quite literally, yeah, and says, I'll be the one who did those things instead, in order to clear Dent's name. That is such a powerful symbol. I'll be the one that people go after so that you don't have to carry that burden. Mm-hmm. To me, that is an absolutely incredible image of what a messiah does. And I think that if it wasn't for that final scene in Dark Knight, I don't think he'd make my list, but I find that scene so powerful that it gets him all the way up to number three.
Wow, that's good. And for all of the reasons that you said, I put Batman as my number two.
Nice.
And what really put me over the edge is...
that we cleared his name?
Well, yeah,
we had to clear... this is why it's so important we acquitted Batman.
Yeah, we cleared his name, but not just that. You mentioned it. He sacrificed his entire lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Batman, Bruce Wayne, is a... and maybe we should have said Bruce Wayne as a messiah.
Either one.
Because Bruce Wayne could have easily had a glorious, carefree life. Could have been leading this huge business, partying, doing whatever he wants, relaxing, comfort.
Yeah.
He gave everything up. Took on... he sacrificed and took on complete discomfort. I mean, he decided to look evil in the eye and then fight against it.
Totally.
He showed the world what could happen if somebody stood up for rights.
Yep.
He sacrificed... in a sense, he risked his life. He didn't actually die. Oh, I think in the comics he did die, but he came back to life.
Yeah.
Recently, actually.
Kinda, I mean, everybody dies and comes back in a comic book. So
big Batman, Bruce Wayne, my number two. He is... I think I'm finding out during the Sci-Fi Christian that he is my favorite superhero.
Yep, and he's a good guy, too. Morally justified, according to the Sci-Fi Christian.
But not according to all of our fans.
No, but Wayne seemed happy about that. Our friend Wayne from Tuning In. Yeah, he put up a comment on one of theirs where he's happy that Batman had gotten acquitted, I think.
Yeah.
So we're doing good work.
Okay, good.
You're
number two.
My number two is Neo from The Matrix.
Oh, Neo.
Yes. All sorts of stuff here. Number one, fulfills a prophecy.
Yep.
Yeah, he is the one. I should say that I'm mostly basing this on the first movie. A little bit on the second and third, but this is mostly based on the first movie as a character.
Yeah.
He is incarnate in the sense that after he is free from the Matrix, he goes back in. He chooses to descend and live among people that he wants to save. Obviously, battles evil. To touch on the third movie, he sacrifices himself for the freedom of others. And then finally, you know, the big one for me is the way that he reveals truth. I love his phone call at the end of the first movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to show them a world without you.
Yeah.
That's it exactly. That as Christians, we believe everybody's under the power of evil one. We're under the power of darkness here on earth. And then Jesus comes and he shows us a world where we don't have to live that way anymore. Mm-hmm. So again, this is kind of like with Batman, where I would probably still have Neo on my list, but that one scene at the end of the first movie is so incredibly powerful to me that that's what gets him to number two on my list.
Yeah. And as you know, because of the book I'm holding in my hand...
you're number one.
Neo is my number one.
Very nice.
And so I can't really... I mean, what you said is perfect. I have a few things I can add, but...
can I say?
I totally agree with everything, especially when you talked about his major sacrifice at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, there was constant symbolism to him and Jesus... even starting in the first movie.
Totally.
Lots of parallels. It's kind of cool. I didn't know this. My last name is Anderson, and so is Neo's.
We need to get the Mr. Anderson sound clip.
Yeah, we should. So Thomas Anderson, Thomas A. Anderson is actually Neo's full name, and this book I'm holding in my hand called The Gospel Reloaded by Chris C.
Is it your father's name, Tom?
No, it's not.
Oh, never mind. I was going to come up with a cool connection.
But this book is saying that Anderson translates into Son of Man. I've never heard that before, and that's my own last name. And I was going to Google it before the show, and I forgot. So, Thomas A. Anderson means Thomas, a son of man. That's kind of interesting. If that's true.
That's pretty sweet.
How could this author not be right?
Totally. Surely not right.
Yeah, the other tie-ins would be that Morpheus kind of acted as a John the Baptist figure,
yep,
proclaiming Jesus' coming arrival. And Cypher, totally the Satan, or you could say
Judas. I mean, the symbolism of Matrix is, that's cool, been talked about to death. We'll do an episode on it eventually, but
so
it's pretty powerful stuff.
So definitely, Neo, my number one messiah.
My number one is Frodo.
Frodo.
Frodo, the symbolism of Frodo is so powerful as somebody who takes evil upon himself in order to defeat it. I love, if you look at like a scene from the very beginning of Fellowship of the Ring, and then look at a scene and from the middle of Return of the King,
mm-hmm,
I mean, the transformation that character goes through is absolutely incredible. The way that he wears this burden, takes it on himself for the good of mankind, he is the only one who can come through there, and then ultimately forsakes his own happiness. I love, love, love the line at the end of Return of the King where he's talking to Sam and he says, the Shire has been saved, but not for me.
Mm.
You know, that he does all this good stuff, but it's not for his sake, it's for the sake of others. That he recognizes that, yeah, I've saved this land that I love, but I'm no longer able to enjoy it because I've been so badly burned by what's happened. Frodo is an absolutely incredible character. And I gotta throw Gandalf in there too, as long as we're talking about Lord of the Rings characters. You know, the whole symbolism at the Bridge of Khazad Dûm, death and resurrection there. You know, if it wasn't for that sequence, I don't think Gandalf would be seen as quite as messianic. But obviously the symbolism of the White Rider, I mean, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna throw Gandalf in there as kind of a side note, but mostly my focus is on Frodo.
Good. You know, a lot of the things that we listed were the same ones that Scott listed.
Yeah, Scott actually had Frodo and Gandalf. He had Neo, and then not a lot because his other four are completely different.
Oh, my bad.
So when we go and read them off, we'll do Scott's before we get to our one.
Yes.
He had Paul from Dune, Paul Atreides, who definitely is a messianic figure.
Okay.
I didn't put him on there because Paul, in some ways, the Dune series is shown as maybe being a little bit anti-messianic figures.
Mm-hmm.
The dark side of what happens when somebody comes and fulfills your prophecies isn't really as good as it seems like it's going to be.
Interesting. I did not read it.
Yeah, so it's a fascinating thing. But Paul, great character. Totally agree with him on the list. Ellen Ripley from Alien and Aliens. I'd be curious to hear what exactly the messianic qualities are there. Great character. I'm not quite sure I see it, but, you know, I haven't seen a few of yours, so I would love to be convinced.
Good.
If you want to expand on that a bit more, Scott. John Connor from Terminator.
Oh, this was a good choice.
Totally see this.
After I read it, I was so tempted to just steal it and put it on my list.
Yeah.
But I had to stop myself, but I think this is a really good choice.
Definitely. It fulfills a prophecy, forsakes his own happiness, leads people to freedom, all of that. Great character.
Yeah, this was a good
great choice. And then his final choice that we talk about is Superman.
Superman.
Which totally works. I just hate Superman.
You know, I don't hate Superman, but I have a hard time seeing him as a messiah.
Oh, he's totally incarnate.
Okay, so he comes down and pretends to be human. What else? Give me some more things.
But that's it, exactly. Is that then he takes on human form to save other people, to rescue people from evil, to bring people hope and freedom, to preserve life, all of that. Superman totally works. I just don't like the character, so he's not on my list.
Someday we should talk about why you hate Superman. Do you want to do it now, or do you want to wait?
He's boring.
Okay.
I mean, basically this is my reason, is that Bruce Wayne is a complex, conflicted character to contrast Superman to my favorite character. Superman's just good. Right. And there's nothing interesting about him. He's just a nice guy.
Mm.
You know, and he's not a particularly dynamic character. There's nothing very, you know, weighty about who he is. He's just kind of a good guy.
Okay.
And there's not a whole lot going on there. I find it boring.
Here's a reason... Here's things I don't like about him, even though I do like him as a character. I don't like how he's all-powerful.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing fun about it. Sure, Kryptonite, but...
But, yeah.
I mean, that's really all. I mean, because then when you watch him in battles, you're like, how is he losing to this guy? He's Superman. And then, otherwise, it's like, I don't know. He has all the powers he could ever need. And almost every power that's, you know, offensive, he has.
Yeah.
Shoots things out of his eyes. Blows cold breath. He has superhuman strength. He can fly. I mean,
totally.
So I'm uninterested in his amount of powers.
Yeah, totally.
So
So let me hear some of your runners-ups.
I only have one.
You only have one.
And
this was the one who you just kicked off your list.
And I kicked them off only because I love Lost so much. I don't want to spoil anything about the story, but they're...
Jack Shepherd?
Yeah, Jack Shepherd.
Totally works.
I mean, I don't want to say anything about why I picked him, but...
But if you've seen the show,
yeah,
it's a great
choice. If you haven't seen Lost, I encourage you to watch Lost.
Totally.
By far my favorite TV show ever.
It is not my favorite, but I highly recommend it.
Good. Who was on your list?
I have five runners up.
Good.
Starting with Anakin. And this is why I put him on my villains list, because it intrigues me that he fits so well with either list. He is the fallen, you know, villainous, evil man, but... He is also the chosen one. He does fulfill the prophecy, and he does defeat evil.
He does.
At the end of the series.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Anakin, Darth Vader, works perfectly for either list.
Yep.
Great character. Paul Atreides, I had on my list, who we already talked about, was one of my runners-up.
From Dune.
Leave from Inc. She's a character in Inc.
This is the movie I haven't seen.
Yeah. Speaks truth into people's lives, enables them to keep going when they are, you know, ready to give up. Very, very powerful character.
Okay.
Sacrifices. Great movie. You have to see it. John Murdock from Dark City. I don't think you've seen Dark City. It is a great, great movie. Frees people from oppression, gives them back their identity. I won't say anything more at risk of spoiling it.
Me and Ben had an idea on some movies to do commentary tracks.
That would be awesome.
And I'm interested to know if there's any interest from the listeners.
Me!
Besides you.
Well, we'll just do it for ourselves if no one else wants
it. Listeners, if you're out there and you'd like to hear us do any commentary tracks where we talk about sci-fi Christian stuff while watching movies, let us know what movies you want us to do.
Yeah, so we would have it lined up, so it's just like if you're listening to a director's commentary. If the movie's 2 hours, it'll be 2 hours, and we'll just sit there and talk through it.
Okay.
And it'll be awesome.
Good.
And then my final one, and I have to give props to our friend Skip Crust for suggesting this one.
Oh.
I didn't see it, but as soon as he explained it to me, I totally got it.
Fox Mulder.
Yeah.
The Steel Your Thunder.
It's great because we were both having the conversation.
Yeah.
And so we had asked Skip yesterday at church, who's your favorite Messianic character? And he said, Fox Mulder. And I said, I don't see that. Well, why is that? And he explained to me that Fox is somebody who reveals truth, is passionate about bringing truth to people who live under lies. Totally get that.
Yeah.
I love the X-Files.
Yeah, me too.
And Mulder's such a great character, so I love that he's able to be on my runner-up list.
Yeah.
So thank you, Skip. You totally convinced me on that.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Yes. Well, Matt, should we get to... We have one piece of listener feedback before we wrap up. Should we get to that quick?
Yes.
Let's transition into listener feedback. All right.
Okay.
So our listener feedback comes from somebody who goes by the name Sci-Fi Christian Fan Number 2.
Really? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Do you know who it is?
Yes.
Oh.
It's Skip.
Oh. Why is he number 2?
Because that's his favorite number.
Oh.
He's like obsessed with it. Man, don't even ask him about it. It's just crazy.
Actually, I know some things about the 2 thing. Like,
yeah.
Do you know that when he's... I hope this isn't a secret. We're going to start us out over there. Do you know that when he's pumping gas?
Yes.
He always goes to 2 cents or something?
Yes.
That's interesting.
It's just freaking weird. A man needs help. Skip, I love you, but man, you know, get some help for the number 2 thing.
Okay.
Anyway, but Sci-Fi Christian Fan Number 2, a.k.a. Skip Crest, writes in. This is one of my favorite traditions, is blowing people's code names, by the way, so don't ever expect it to be kept a secret. I have a question regarding Christian sci-fi. I'm not typically a fan of anything labeled Christian. This is our pastor, by the way.
By the way.
I.e. Left Behind movies. But there are a few books that I've enjoyed. What do you think of Ted Dekker? I wonder what Matt thinks of Ted Dekker.
Him.
Yeah, in particularly the Circle Trilogy and Frank Peretti. Dekker doesn't classify himself as a Christian author, but his books clearly have deep spiritual themes, and he is a Christian. Peretti does classify himself as a Christian author, and his books, too, have spiritual themes. Do either of you have any thoughts on Christian sci-fi books, movies that you enjoy or recommend? Yep, see our first episode. because that's way too long of a conversation to have. Though we should do more recommendations sometime, because I love doing that.
Okay.
Particularly because I'm not a fan of Christian fiction, but I am a fan of fiction with spiritual themes.
Good. Well, we've talked a lot about that in the last 5 episodes.
But I did want to talk about we've talked about Dekker a little bit, but have you read Frank Peretti?
The only Frank Peretti book I've read is one he did with Ted Dekker called House.
Interesting.
And it was my least favorite Ted Dekker book I think I've read.
Nice.
But Frank Peretti... Oh, wait, no. I have read... Oh, no. Oh, no, I've read most of This Present Darkness by Frank Peretti.
Which is the one where he kind of goes behind the scenes, and it's like a normal story, but he shows you what's going on with the angels and demons.
Yeah. You see 3 points of view. You see the human point of view, those human characters. There are angel characters, and you see their point of view, and you see demon characters.
Yeah.
And the point is there's a city that's under attack, So you're seeing all sides of the story, and it's really good. I have probably 20 pages left. I stopped reading it about a year ago just because I got busy. So yeah. I'll finish it eventually, but I really recommend that book.
So do I. Great book. I think if you were going to classify it as genre fiction, it might be more horror, almost. Frank Pretty's a bit of a Christian horror author.
Typically, but not this book. House is definitely horror.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of what the sci-fi or maybe more fantasy, though we obviously believe in angels and demons, but it's more in that vein of...
Yeah, if you had to classify it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if it fits with our stuff here, and I think it does.
Definitely.
Yeah, so maybe we'll do a show on it sometime when you finish the last 20.
Have you read that book?
Oh, yeah, a couple times.
Have you read the next one, which is...
Fear of Seeing the Darkness?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read pretty much all of Frank Pretty's stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, but I've not read House.
Okay, so I have it if you want to borrow it.
Okay, but yeah, he's a good writer. I enjoy him. I'm with Skip, though, that a lot of stuff that's labeled Christian fiction, especially Left Behind, I don't have enough time right now to rant about Left Behind.
Okay, I don't like Left Behind in general, but I don't mind something being called Christian fiction. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, I think that what Skip's getting at, and what I would get at a little more, I'll speak for myself, and I'm guessing Skip would agree, is that a lot of times when something is labeled Christian fiction, yeah, the writing tends to be kind of lazy because people will buy it just because this is the Christian version of Lord of the Rings, or this is the Christian version of Stephen King or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we just take something that has already been done really well, well done in the secular realm, and we just give it a little twist to make it the Christian version. So I think that's what I don't like. Okay. Obviously, there's some definite exceptions that are really well done.
In his letter, Skip said that Ted Decker didn't or doesn't like to be classified as a Christian fiction author.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask you
about that. I can't see how he would not be, because first of all, he's under a Christian publisher.
Yeah.
He doesn't, some of his things are a little bit more edgy than a typical Christian author, but I mean, I can't see how he wouldn't be classified as a Christian fiction author.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something he said or that Skip's alluding to, so
yeah,
you can let us know, Skip.
I think what it really comes down to is your publishing company. Yes. If you're published by a Christian publishing house, you're a Christian author, wouldn't you say?
That would make sense to me.
Yeah.
So, Ted Decker, Christian author.
Definitely.
Cool. Well, Matt, we have had an awesome show.
I love these top fives. And listeners, if you have some top fives you want to suggest, send them in to us at feedback@scifichristianpodcast.com.
And that's all from here then for tonight. I am Ben DiBono.
I'm Matt Anderson.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians. Signing off.